Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go! Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed over the weekend. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. Super excited what's coming up. Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass. 2-minute warning in about 6 minutes. How Arch Manning is changing the way that we look at college recruiting. And what team is at a crossroads going into 2022? And it's not as simple as just, oh, they need to fire their coach. Crossroads meaning where they stand in the public eye. But I start the hour off with this. I saw this trending on Twitter, and I want to bring this up because Michael and I have actually had this discussion before, but I want to ask Michael. Michael, have you noticed that depending on the bottle of water you drink, there is a different flavor?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, exactly. What is the worst flavor bottled water, in your opinion?
Dasani.
You think Dasani?
Yes.
I like Dasani.
And Aquafina.
See, I like Aquafina. And I think it's because of, like, I was raised on Aquafina. Like, that was the one that was always sitting inside the house. So I've never noticed it. I'll tell you the two that I really dislike. Number one is Arrowhead. Arrowhead always leaves a horrendous taste in the back of my throat. Like, I cannot mess with it. And number two is Voss water. Voss is the most overrated water of all time. It's
Voss with a V.
A Voss. It's a Voss. And it comes in a glass bottle. It's Voss.
Not no more. I've seen them in plastic bottles.
They are. Well, every single time that I've seen it is in a glass bottle. So it's even double the pretentiousness. But it's also double the suckage of flavor. Like, there's not anything good about it. And, I didn't realize until, like, you really think about it, how much water has changed based off a company. So it is kind of like a soda, like, if you think about it. Because Pepsi tastes different than Coke. Coke tastes different than Sprite. And Aquafina definitely tastes different than Dasani. For some reason, you don't like both. I'm okay with either. And Arrowhead, to me, is pure garbage. Like, let's be real. Water does matter. And it does mean when you go get your water, you want it fresh, you want it filtered, and you want it to your liking. Michael will not be drinking Dasani water anytime soon. I will not be drinking Voss water anytime soon. The bottom line is that we have to start realizing water is not just water. It's a unique experience. We all should probably enjoy it.
Time for the 2-minute warning around the NFL. Here's Cole Thompson.
Each and every day at this time, we go around the NFL, breaking down some of the biggest storylines you might have missed, and we do so in 2 minutes or less, hence the reason we call it the 2-minute warning. Oh, Michael! If you wouldn't mind, please start the clock.
Though many were surprised when Tyreek Hill chose to leave Kansas City in favor of a better contract in Miami, his former teammate, guard Trey Smith, said he completely understands Hill's motivation behind the move. Smith said on the J. Martin Ramon Show radio show that he'll never blame a guy to get paid and that Hill has to do what's best for him. There's no bad blood between the former teammates as Smith wishes Hill the best with the Dolphins. Hill had been the jewel in the crown for the Chiefs receiving core for the first 6 years of his career, racking up 6,630 receiving yards and 56 touchdowns in that span and becoming a favorite target of quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Last offseason, Kansas City gave Hill permission to seek a trade after the two sides couldn't come to terms on a massive extension. This eventually resulted in the 28-year-old receiver heading to Miami, where the Dolphins gave him a new 4-year deal worth $120 million.
To me, I don't understand why anybody is really upset at Tyreek Hill. Like, I don't. Because you got to understand something real fast. Kansas City waited way too long to extend him. Because as soon as you saw a sign-and-trade kind of deal get done with the Las Vegas Raiders and Devontae Adams, you knew that the asking price was going up. Like, this is why it was so important and so essential for several teams to get deals done with their, like, with their receivers. I'll tell you one right now. Like, Stephon Diggs, thank God Buffalo got a deal done with him, because if that would have been astronomically in the same ballpark. Instead, it's a lot cheaper. So at the end of the day, you're going to get paid. And let's not act like for 1 second Tyreek Hill does not deserve to get paid. I know I didn't have him on my top 10 wide receiver quarterback combo, but at the same time, it's a little hard when I don't know what Tua Tagovailoa is going to be. This is a four-time 1,000-yard receiver. He's coming off a career year with 111 catches. He's at least had 6 touchdowns per season. He's averaged over 14 yards per play in 5 of his 7 years in the league. Like, he's an elite receiver. We all know that he is a top 5 receiver in the game today. He's going to get paid. And if Kansas City didn't want to pay him, Miami did. So there's no reason for anyone on Kansas City's roster to say, oh, he wasn't being a team player. Would you say that about Davante Adams? Would you say that about Stephon Diggs? Would you say that about Mike Evans? Would you say that about all these other elite receivers that we're seeing get paid top dollar? Tyreek Hill was going to get paid this offseason, whether that would be New York, Miami, Kansas City, Las Vegas, Los Angeles. Someone was going to pay him. Guess what? Trey Smith speaks the truth. No reason to hate the game. No reason to hate the player. Reason to hate? The player not getting paid what the game is owed him.
The Chicago Bears announced Saturday the signing of second round cornerback Kyler Gordon, which brings 11 of the team's 12 draft picks under contract ahead of the 2022 season. Gordon figures to be a key part of the infusion of new youth and talent. He was Chicago's first pick in this year's draft, and has already received positive reviews from the team's coaching staff. After logging 3 straight seasons as a top 10 scoring defense, Chicago fell to 14th in points allowed in 2020 before dropping even farther to 22nd overall last season. The precipitous decline coincided with a measly 8 interceptions during the entirety of the 2021 campaign.
Yeah, I think you use your whole experience, not just with Rocky Asin, which is, he did a nice job last year, really had a good year for Indianapolis. And I just think that you take your whole experience. You've worked with a lot of different players, a lot of different body types, different movers. They all move different. They all cover different. So you just got to learn, how that player operates physically and also what his camera looks at. What does he look at? How does he process the game? And I think that's as important when you're working with and dealing with players to help them to succeed.
I might be alone here, but I'm not completely sold that Chicago is going to be the worst team in the NFC this year. Don't get me wrong. They're not going to be one of the best teams. They're not a playoff team. They're certainly not going to even be in the conversation of top tier or top half of NFC teams. But I don't think that they're going to be the worst, mainly because of the defense. Matt Eberflus's defenses have been phenomenal for the last 3 years in Indianapolis. And history speaks for itself. When you look at what they've done as a whole, they find ways to eliminate the process. They're really good at adding pressure in the backfield, and their secondary has been top-notch. When you look at Indianapolis the past few years, let's just see. Last year, they were ranked 12th in total defense. The year before that, if I'm not mistaken, they were ranked 8th in total defense. And in 2019, I think that they were... Actually, they had a really bad year in 2019. 2018, they had a really good year. They ranked top 10 in defense. So, Eberflus's defenses have worked. And getting a guy like Kyler Gordon to pair alongside with Jalen Johnson on the outside, at least I think can help eliminate the process of what you're looking for at cornerback. I mean, Johnson's a very good undervalued corner. And I do think that right now we're not giving enough credit and enough respect to the likes of what Kyler Gordon did in college. Adding also in Jaquan Brisker, I think, really is going to help out. I think that you also have a really good safety tandem with a younger guy in Eddie Jackson still back there. The linebacking core in the new 4-3 set, I think, is going to be fine with Roquan Smith up the middle. So the defense, I think, is going to actually be not that bad this year for Chicago. The question is, will the offense be able to turn it on and put up any bit of points? If so, don't completely rule out Chicago from making at least a little bit of noise, like getting an upset here or two. But again, now it's just about getting the right players in the building for Matt Eberflus to be successful.
The New York Jets haven't been to the playoffs since 2010 and have finished in the center of the AFC East 6 of the past 8 seasons. Could gangrene finally turn the corner after a decade of repeated rebuilds? According to linebacker CJ Mosley, it's a standard in 2022. Mosley said in an interview with AL.com that this is a playoff or bust year after a strong offseason via free agency and the NFL draft. In Coach Robert Saleh's first season, the Jets went 4-13, but Mosley's optimism comes from meshing the acquired talent with a familiarity with the scheme. In addition to the vets having another year in the system, Gangrene added corner Sauce Gardner, receiver Garrett Wilson, and edge rusher Jermaine Johnson II in the first round of the draft. The infusion of young talent gives Saleh an enticing mix to grow.
I'm not here to say that the New York Jets could potentially make the playoffs. Like, anyone could potentially make the playoffs. But let's just look at the AFC as a whole. They're arguably the third best team in their own division, so we can count that out. Miami is better. Buffalo is better. I think you can make an argument that New England is better, but at certain positions, New York would have the edge. I think that they're worse than every single team in the AFC North, which would mean Baltimore, which would mean Cincinnati, which would mean Cleveland, even with Jacoby Brissett as the starting quarterback, and Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett as your starting quarterback. The AFC South, they're better than Houston. I think they're better than Jacksonville. They're not better than Indianapolis and Tennessee, and they're certainly not better than any single team inside of the AFC West. So, in reality, we're saying that they are better than three teams in the AFC. It's a step in the right direction, because last year, in my opinion, they were the worst team in the AFC on a consistent level. They were horrendous in the AFC. Slightly better than what, you know, some people maybe thought, but they were horrendous for most of the season, outside of a few quick snaps here and there. When I look at this season, they should be better, but every other team in their division got better besides New England. I would say about 10 teams in the conference got better besides New York. So what you saw last year, where they were on average the 16th or 15th best team in the AFC, they're now probably the 14th or 13th best team in the AFC. And even though they improved, that's more so a saying on how good and how top-heavy the conference is. Playoff or bust? I would go with the bust right now. And unfortunately for CJ Mosley, he's not going to like the answer to that, because that would probably mean he becomes very expensive and very cuttable after this year.
Dallas Cowboys linebacker Micah Parsons dominated as a rookie, earning Defensive Rookie of the Year honors, and was named a first-time All-Pro after finishing with 13 sacks, 84 tackles, and 30 QB hits. Missing the season's final game on the COVID-19 list wiped out Parsons' bid for the rookie sack record of 14.5 set by Javon Curse in 1999. Entering year two, the versatile defender is after the all-time record. Parsons said that the goal would be 15 sacks this year at the minimum, but he hopes that he can break the record of 23 total sacks. It's not impossible after the addition of the 17th game last fall. Parsons finished second in Defensive Player of the Year voting behind TJ Watt, who tied the all-time sack record with all-time sack record of 22.5 last season. The expectations for the 23-year-old linebacker second season are through the roof, but Parsons is only concerned with his personal goals.
It's not impossible to say that he could get 23 sacks next year, because think about it. He's an off-ball linebacker that often blitzes in this style of defense underneath Mike McCarthy. So the way that they run the defense with Dan Quinn, they're going to blitz him a lot. And it's more so because of he's an off-ball linebacker who can add another element to the game, which is exactly what they want in Dallas. But look at the other names that are going to be fighting against him. TJ Watt, he's not going to slow down. He is a pass rusher only. Myles Garrett, arguably now slightly underrated in the pass rushing department because we don't talk about him in the same prominent light. Nick Bosa, who has been on a tear since being drafted out of Ohio State. And even when he had the torn ACL, boy, oh boy, was he scary in those first two games. And Trey Hendrickson has done a phenomenal job. He's proven that 2020 was not just a fluke. I think that Aaron Donald isn't going anywhere. Cam Jordan still is putting up very good numbers. It's not impossible to say, but also keep this in consideration. In year two of any single roster, any single team, any single organization, people start to figure you out a little bit. It's how you build off that. And that's why we see a lot of sophomore, quote-unquote, slumps, because of the immense expectations we saw in year one never really meet the same standard in year two. If he gets 13 sacks next year, that's a huge, huge, huge win for Dallas. And that's a huge, huge, huge win for Parsons, who would have 26 sacks in less than 35 games in the NFL. That's impressive. That, to me, is extremely impressive. But at the same time, when you think about it, and when you look across the board, if he regresses just a little bit, well, he shouldn't have been this good as a rookie. There's no reason to say that he could have 23 sacks next year. There's also no reason to say he could probably finish with 11 sacks, 10 sacks, 12.5 sacks, 14 sacks. And that still is a very, very, very good number. Expectation versus reality. Sometimes we tear that line. Parsons very much is. Just be happy if you get over double-digit sacks, brother. You're continuously showing why everyone underrated you and why you were easily the best linebacking prospect of the 2021 draft. There you have it. 2-minute warning right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
There's so much to explore at Total Wine & More. And when you discover your new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay, well, you discover a whole lot more. Like the friendly smile of a helpful expert guide ready to guide you to your perfect bottle. And the confidence of knowing you just added something special to your repertoire, thus making it a purchase again and again and again. So explore the wondrous selections and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and you'll love what you find. Remember to drink responsibly. It must be 21 years old or older to order. So I usually don't talk about college baseball or really other college sports outside of the Final Four and mostly college football, because I usually like to stay in my lane. But what I will say is I have covered the College World Series this past year. I've done a lot of research. I've done a lot of writing on it from home, even though I wasn't able to go to Omaha, and I've watched almost every single game. Here's what I can tell you about this Ole Miss roster. Never count a team out. You may be down, but never out. And if you go and look back at the history of Ole Miss baseball, there's a reason why this team, this roster, this group, they were able to finally get the job done. Let's take a look at the manager, Mike Bianco. Longest tenured manager in the ranks of college baseball in the SEC, going on his 22nd season. You know what's funny is he actually almost left last year for LSU. Paul Molinari left, finally, electing to hang up the cleats for good after a historic 30-plus year run at Notre Dame and later LSU. And Scott Woodward, the athletic director, wanted to bring in an alum. They want to bring in someone very close to the culture. They have that. They absolutely have that with the likes of Bianco, who played 2 years at shortstop in the late 80s or early 90s. But he wanted to stay. There was a moment in May when multiple people, multiple boosters, and even the athletic director, Keith Carter, had to sit out and wonder, is it time to move off Bianco? Because 8 years in a row, we've been trying to get back to Omaha, and we can't get there. But what's funny is, all you need is your team to believe in you. And the second that you have that, you have everything to reset. And that's what kind of happened. Tim Elko, the first baseman and captain of this team, came out with a statement on Twitter saying that if they made it to Omaha, they would be playing for a national title. And boy, oh boy, would they be winning it. Go back and look at what the Ole Miss Rebels did throughout the entire NCAA tournament. They averaged 7.5 runs per game. They got monumental wins over Miami, which was a nationally ranked seed, and Arizona, the team that eliminated them from the Tucson Super Regional a year ago, thus keeping them out of Omaha to move to the Super Regionals. They threw three shutout performances, including two in the Super Regionals against another nationally ranked team in Southern Miss. They had a pitching staff that was phenomenal throughout the entire postseason, with Jack Doherty finding a way to make an impact at the starting rotation and out of the bullpen, with guys like Dylan DeLucia, who had had a phenomenal overall season. And then you had freshman Hunter Elliott, who exploded onto the scene as the team's new number one pitcher. But it wasn't enough, because naturally, why would it be? Ole Miss came in with the fourth best odds to win, even though they were the hottest team in baseball. And there were a lot of hot teams going into this tournament. Texas A&M was phenomenal in the College Station Regional. You also had great overall play from Stanford, fighting its way back to not only win the Stanford Regional, but then meet up on UConn several days later. You also had Auburn, who found a way to beat up in Corvallis against the likes of Oregon State. And let's not sleep on Notre Dame, who recently watched Link Jarrett leave the program to head back to Florida State because that was his alma mater. Yeah, they were pretty hot too. In fact, they were so hot, they beat the number one team in the nation in Knoxville, I might add, to eliminate Tennessee, the fan favorite and easy betting odds winners of the NCAA tournament in the College World Series in 2022. The entire process throughout Omaha, this was Ole Miss's season. This was Ole Miss's dominance. And you want to know why it was? Veteranship. Guys like Dylan Graham and guys like Tim Elko stepping up when it mattered most. Young players such as Jacob Gonzalez, who only had 3 total hits going into Sunday's finale, made the most of his time. And lo and behold, they dominated. They beat the crap out of Auburn in game one, then bolstered their way past Arkansas, only to then face Arkansas again in a 3-2 matchup before Dylan DeLucia, who was named the College World Series MVP, put on the performance of a lifetime. A 4-hit shutout. Shutouts don't happen in college baseball, period, let alone on the biggest stage. Yet here you are, watching a junior transfer make his name known and eliminating the Razorbacks to finally get to the College World Series finale. Don't sleep on Oklahoma, though. Oklahoma was a very good team. They finished 2nd in the Big 12 during the regular season before eventually winning the Big 12 tournament in Arlington, yet didn't even have to get a number one seed. They watched Oklahoma State host a regional. They watched Texas host a regional. As the Big 12 winners, they had to go travel to Gainesville to get respect. And then they had to win a best of 3 series against Virginia Tech to get to the finals. So congratulations are in order for this Oklahoma team. You want to know why? Because they dominated along the way as well. And it came down to just a few minor moments. Cade Horton, he's a really good pitcher. I've talked to a couple people around the MLB spectrum. They expect him to be a top 15 selection in the MLB draft next month. That's how good he is. But the veteranship and the heartbreak and the determination of an Ole Miss roster that we see nowadays, that's what got them the win. That's what kept them prevailing. Jacob Gonzalez, 2 monumental hits, a solo home run, and a game-tying RBI single in the bottom of the 8th inning to set up Brad Johnson to strike out the side in 14 pitches and bring a national title to Oxford. This is now something that we really need to talk about when it comes to sports. Because I'm telling you guys, you look at how Ole Miss played, it's the definition of what we need to see in college baseball. College baseball has slowly began to grow as one of the more thriving collegiate sports across America. And it's reasons why when you look at this series. By the way, did you go look at Omaha this past weekend? How many fans were in the stands clad in that kind of baby bluish, whatever color you want to say, land shark blue with the red color of Ole Miss? Fans travel. And this is actually a really good thing to say about the SEC. Because if I always get brought up in conversations, why do you talk so much about the SEC? It's not, they're just a football conference. Since 2009, the SEC has featured 8 national champions in baseball. In fact, they were the most recent winner with Mississippi State taking down Vanderbilt, another SEC team, for the title. So when I look at this, the fans travel well, the facilities are phenomenal. Every single season, it feels like there's at least 8 or 9 options from the conference that could end up winning the whole dang thing. And the premier talent is across the board. By the way, if I were to throw in Texas and Oklahoma, who will be in the SEC by 2025, three-fourths of the entire College World Series were SEC teams, where it just means more. Congratulations are in order to Mike Bianco and the Ole Miss Rebels, but congratulations are in order to the SEC. Bottom line, they are just better, and it just means more. That's why they dominate in every single sport.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Well, it's that part of the show, Cole's Calendar, where we break down the national holiday of every single day. And then we limit you to only one option because of, let's be real, there's only one day. You should only have one national holiday, and we pick it for you because if you children can't come to terms on your own agreement. So, Michael, what are our options today for June 27th?
We have four of them.
Okay.
First one is National Sunglasses Day.
I mean, isn't every day Sunglasses Day? I try to block out the haters all the time. God, that was terrible.
Dude, God, that was cringe.
That was terrible.
Oh, no, dude.
We can't even use that. No, now just give me the X, man. Like, just, oh, God. Sometimes I hear myself and I think it's going to be funny in my head, and then I see the word vomit just literally pull out. Oh, my God. I can't even.
I think all the time you've done this, I think that's the worst thing you've ever said.
I can't use that one now simply because of what I just said. Like, I can't. I'd rather be National Bash on Cold Day than use that one now at this point. What's the second option?
We have, if it's loading, there you go, National Orange Blossom Day.
Like the type of flower?
Enjoy my lesson instead of beauty. I'm going to be you. Yes. The flower.
I've never even actually seen a...
is it a flower?
I don't
orange
know.
Orange Blossom Day on June 21st. Each year encourages to enjoy orange blossoms for their aesthetic beauty. Orange blossoms have been used in culinary dishes, desserts, and teas worldwide.
Yeah, too much. Nope.
See, we were both confused.
I was very confused on that. That does not sound right whatsoever. Nope. All right. What's next?
National Onion Day.
Ugh, okay. Onions are one of those foods that, like, I'm very weird about. Like, if you mix it in with pico, I'm great with onions.
It's a vegetable, right?
I think it is. I'm like 95%. 800-224-2004. We work in radio and broadcasting and in sports. We don't work in the fruit industry. Can someone tell me, is an onion a fruit or a vegetable? I always thought it was a vegetable, but who's
it
to
is.
Say?
It's an onion. Yeah. Good. It's an onion. I mean, it's a vegetable.
An onion's an onion. I would hope so, Michael. I truly would. Now, here's what I will say. Onions in, like, French onion soup are phenomenal, or, like, sour cream and onion chips are great. But if I ever actually have sour cream and onion, oh, and I will say, it has to be the right onion. So, like, red onion, the only type I like is mixed in with my pico. White onion, the only type I like is when I caramelize it and I make it very brown and I add it to, like, a soupy kind of dish. That's the only way I'll eat onions.
Are Funyuns real onions?
No, but I will say I don't mind the onion flavor. I've always liked Funyuns. And because of I am a madman... Like, I literally am. I don't know how my intestines are still functioning at this point. I used to down a bag of Flamin' Hot Funyuns a day.
One of the best chips out there.
Dude, they're Flamin' so good. Funyuns. They're so good, aren't they?
They are. I remember when they came out, it was hard to get them.
Bro, I might make that ranks this week. Is the best chips out there, because we're talking elite status.
Flamin' Hot better be on all of them.
Oh, I would just have to make a whole category of Flamin' Hot stuff.
That's
true. To be honest. What's our last one?
National Ice Cream Cake Day.
So what's funny is...
Oh, please don't tell me you don't like ice cream cake.
No, I actually do like ice cream cake.
I was about to say.
Here's the thing. I don't like cake. I really don't. There's two types of cake that I'll eat. Ice cream and cookie cake. So what's funny is, I think that my brother's groom's cake for his wedding in November... They're trying to make it like a very upscale ice cream cake.
Ooh.
And I'm very excited about it.
That's different.
Because Kirsten and I, neither of us are really big into the breading of like cake. So we're doing like a very upscale cookie cake. We saw it at her friend Michaela's wedding, and it was hands down the greatest cake I've ever eaten in my life. I think that ice cream cake is a new thing to watch for. And you know what? With the younger generation starting to get married... We grew up with ice cream cake. We were like the guinea pigs. We were the guinea pigs for it. So I would not be shocked. You know what? I think we have the winner, Michael. I hereby decree National Ice Cream Cake Day. Stop by, pick up a nice slice of vanilla cake filled in with birthday cake ice cream. It's a delicious, nutritious treat. that's going, you're going to love. And you're going to get some frosting on there. So you get frosting. Good. Cake. Good. Ice cream. Good. I'm Joey Tribbiani here, people, telling you exactly what you need to have today.
I'm tempted to go get one today now.
Go to Carvel and get yourself a Cookie Puss or Fudgy the Whale.
Go to where?
Do you not know Carvel?
No.
Oh, I forget. It's only an East Coast thing. So Carvel is like this really famous ice cream cake parlor shop. And they have like these cakes called Fudgy the Whale or Cookie Puss. And like people went ape crap over them. Like that's like, I don't think it's the original ice cream cake, but I know it's like the most popular out there. And like my mom's from New Jersey. And like whenever we go up there, she's always like, we got to stop and get a Carvel. And we always see the Fudgy the Whale and Cookie Puss. And I'm always like, eh, that's ice cream cake.
I'll stay with Baskin Robbins.
I like ice cream cake. I'm not going to lie. I do think that ice cream cake is a game changer. But you know what's an even bigger game changer, Michael? I will tell you. Arch Manning committing to Texas. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Let's talk about it. Arch Manning has officially declared he will become a member of the Texas Longhorns for the 2023 season as the biggest name in the recruiting cycle. I kind of brought this up on Friday's show. I didn't have a lot of time to go through it because we were at a hard out. I have a little bit more time with this segment. You have to understand that just in a few hours, what a player can do to change the game in terms of recruiting. And recruiting nowadays is going to be one of the biggest things that you have to worry about when it comes to a team and their overall success. Because if when you get the right player in the building, people are going to want to play for him. Michael, do you remember when a guy by the name of Caleb Williams decided to go to USC, leave Oklahoma, and head out west?
Of course.
So, did you notice that right after, you saw offensive linemen sign, you saw wide receivers be interested? Mario Williams was always going to Oklahoma, going to USC after what he saw, did at Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley, but it made his decision that much easier because if he knew his quarterback in college, at least at Oklahoma, was going to be his quarterback at USC. He had Travis Dye, the running back from Oregon, want to sign up right after Caleb Williams. And Jordan Addison from Pittsburgh decided that USC was going to be his home for the 2022 season in large part due to quarterback play. You kind of have that now with Arch Manning. And what's funny is, when you think about it, Arch Manning handled this completely professional. Maybe it's because if he grew up in Manning royalty. Maybe it's because if he's had two Super Bowl winning uncles and four different family members, his father Cooper, both of his uncles, and his grandfather Archie, all go through the recruiting process. But Eli Manning actually said something very poignant about his nephew at the Manning Passing Academy this past week. Not only about his maturity, but about his growth off the field.
No, I think he's handled everything very well. Just, there's been a lot of pressure on him. There's been a microscope on him and for a long time. And I think he's done a good job just trying to understand what's important. And that's just playing high school football, being a great teammate, you know, learning. He's still playing high school basketball. He's just enjoyed the experience. But he's gone through the recruiting process. He's asked a ton of questions. He's met with everybody. And at some point, it's just you go with your heart, and you know the right spot for you. You might not be able to pinpoint exactly why you're going to a certain place. It just knows that it's gonna be the right spot, and so happy for him.
800-224-2004. Let's talk about Arch Manning's commitment to the state of Texas. Hook'em potentially being back. I find it very interesting that also the Manning family went against the grain. If you don't believe me, think about this for a second. Both Eli and Peyton fell in love with a certain coaching style and demeanor by one person. They had offers to go everywhere. Alabama, LSU, Georgia, multiple different schools. Peyton really set the tone because of Ole Miss felt like the safe bet since Archie went there. But Tennessee had a guy by the name of David Cutcliffe as their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Also one of their lead recruiters, meet with the Manning family on more than one occasion to talk ball and more specifically talk about the future of what Peyton can bring to the table. He wanted to go play for David Cutcliffe, and as soon as he arrived there, he set records. He's the still all-time leader in passing yards. He's the all-time leader in passing touchdowns, and that record hasn't come close to being broken in Rocky Top. But what was funny is every single time David Cutcliffe entered the Manning home, he didn't just talk to the likes of Peyton. He was talking to Eli. So when Eli was up to go ahead and be recruited, Cutcliffe was named the head coach at Ole Miss, thus making the decision that much easier. Steve Sarkisian prioritized Arch Manning this entire recruiting process. Georgia, they loved Arch Manning. Alabama, they wanted Arch Manning. Tennessee, why wouldn't they? Ole Miss, of course they were interested. Clemson, they needed Arch Manning. Did they? Because if every single other school has added a quarterback from the 2022 class, Steve Sarkisian prioritized making Arch Manning his go-to option. Didn't reach, didn't go out for other guys, wasn't interested in bringing in someone else via the transfer portal or along these lines, wanted to prove to Arch Manning that it was different. And Peyton had a very similar feel when he was going through his own recruiting process back in 1994, and he spoke about it at the Manning Academy.
There's no doubt it's different, and it starts much earlier, you know, than it did. But, to me, anybody that gets recruited, you know, deserves a chance to enjoy their, you know, high school experience, right? And, you know, high school football was one of the great times of my life. And in Canton this past August, I had Broncos teammates, I had Colts teammates, Tennessee teammates, I had Newman teammates. I had, you know, maybe 10 guys that I played high school football with. And the relationships you make in high school just don't go away. So that's why I'm glad for his sake that he made this decision. And I did have a conversation with him last week after he made his last visit, just because he kind of asked about sort of when I made my decision. And I just remember as soon as I got back from my last visit, I basically announced where I was going 2 days later, because I knew. You know, when you know, you know.
When you think about it, all it takes is one person to change your culture. So Arch Manning commits to Texas, and now we're looking at the Longhorns slowly surging up the recruiting trails. Going into the week, they ranked as low as number 20 on most big boards. After yesterday, with the commitments of multiple players, multiple offensive linemen, a couple of wide receivers, and potentially two more players signing up in the next few days, they rank inside the top five. They're a number five team in the country when it comes to recruiting, all because of one player there. Think about it for a second. You get the right quarterback in the building, you want good offensive linemen. Offensive linemen want to protect the best of the bunch. They have offers from Texas, they're going to head that way. Receivers, why would they want to go catch balls from the number six or number eight quarterback in the nation when they can catch them from the number one? If they're as good as advertised, congratulations. Both of them will find a way to make it to the NFL sooner rather than later. When you look at what Arch Manning has done in just a few short hours after committing to Texas for the program's future, he's building a repertoire and a pipeline of potential talent to make Texas great again by the time they get to the SEC. And lo and behold, don't think for one second that Texas fans are going to sit here and say, oh, we need a transition period. You have Quinn Ewers coming in this year, and you have Arch Manning following him up. You know what this is the closest thing to? Vince Young being replaced by Colt McCoy. And guess what happened there, baby? You watch national championship expectations be reached and national championships be won. That's going to be the goal and the expectation for Steve Sarkisian, Chris Del Conte, and the Longhorn fan base as soon as Quinn Ewers takes a snap in 2022, and certainly when Arch Manning arrives on campus in 2023. All it takes is one player to come into your building and change your culture. Arch Manning is that. In the great words of Ray Liotta, who played Shoeless Joe Jackson in the movie Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. Arch Manning is the it, and they're coming left and right to play at Texas. Now, the reality factor is, of course, Texas has to be able to start winning on the football field, or Steve Sarkisian is going to be out of a job. But let's just get this out of the way. Steve Sarkisian won the recruiting battle against Nick Saban. He won it against Kirby Smart. He won it against Dabo Swinney. And he won it against the likes of Brian Kelly at LSU. He has proven that he can recruit 10 out of 10. And his quarterbacks, ever since he was at USC, then at Washington, then at Alabama, have been successful. It's now time to see those winning results transition to the football field, or else he's going to be out of a job. But let's give a lot of credit to what Steve Sarkisian was able to do. Bringing in Arch Manning changed the way of Texas's culture, and it's changed the way of their recruiting process going into 2023. We'll close out just saying it right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
One final thought, as I do every day here on Just Saying It. Thank you, Sophie, for your services. Now, for those of you who don't know who Sophie is, she is a Seattle Mariners fan who was at the game yesterday where Jesse Winker and multiple players on both sides of the field were ejected during an 18-minute delay in the second inning. But naturally, being a good Seattle Mariners fan that she is, ordered him a pizza from Mountain Mike's in Anaheim and had it delivered to the stadium. But here's where the story gets better. Simaranjit, who was the DoorDash driver, actually was able to go ahead and get the pizza delivered to Jesse Winker. And then Winker messaged her on social media saying, "Got your pizza, thank you." And in return, Sophie then posted King Simaranjit's Venmo on Twitter. And he got thousands of dollars coming into his family. What a story. Baseball fans are the best. That does it for me. I'll be back tomorrow to break down more MLB and NBA talk. Have a good Monday. Later.